This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasolines. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now with your host, Rick Moore.
And that's me. Thank you so much for tuning in today. I love all of you, or most of you. Support today coming from the backyard, UVA Corner's Culinary Secret at the end of Elliewood Avenue. The backyard has a spring menu. They have daily specials and an ever-changing list of beers on tap. For more info, dial them up at 434-202-8215. Online, it's thebackyarduva.com. And they also have a Facebook page. All right. Thank you for tuning in today. It is May 15th, and it is a beautiful day. Hopefully you are listening outside while doing your gardening, maybe riding down the road where you're going someplace special, or you're just inside after being so tired of a work week and a busy weekend. But it's going to be cool all around because we have one of my favorite guests, Professor Ramazani. How are you, sir?
I'm fine, just thank you.
I appreciate you coming in. It's always special. I always feel like we're doing such serious and important topics when you're here. Is that true?
Thank you.
Professor Ramazani is a professor emeritus, retired professor from UVA, professor of government and foreign affairs, specialty in the Middle East relationships. We'll be talking about the death of Osama bin Laden and how that affects Middle East relationships between the United States and oh so many countries. Professor has also been deemed the spiritual father of the International Center of Jefferson Studies at Monticello. Now that is something that you put on your license plate. that's a hefty topic. And how did you get that title?
Well, because I had something to do with the establishment of the center, and they have been generous, especially the former president of Monticello Foundation. Dan Jordan adopted me with that expression, and it has stayed with me.
And there's a special event coming up I'll mention throughout the hours. Diplomacy and Education, Discovering and Teaching Reality. And on June 13th, during the daytime, 8 a.m. to 2 p.m., an event that is open to the public. If you Google Monticello, go online, you do need to sign up, but it is free for everyone. But there are quite a number of people, ambassadors, et cetera, coming in. You'll be given the keynote address.
Correct.
Liberty, Democracy, Education, and Diplomacy.
Yes.
By you at 8:30 in the morning. But quite a list of folks coming in to talk, and I hope those of you who are listening today and find the topics to be really sort of overwhelming in terms of importance and interest, please go online and Google Monticello and find the upcoming event. And again, it is free with the keynote address given by our guest today, Professor R.K. Ramazani, retired from the university, although apparently not retired in all senses of the word. All right, so our guest today will be chatting about Osama bin Laden, certainly in the news a lot in the last 2 weeks, but how that affects, for many people, it's standing outside and clapping. Those are the issues, the images that were seen, I guess that Sunday evening, exactly 2 weeks ago, outside of the White House, in many areas, down at the World Trade Center spot. Professor, let's just jump right into it. And in the United States, the announcement of the death of Osama bin Laden was received, certainly with a very large percentage, with shouts of joy and cheers. Does that apply across the world?
Not really. I think, first of all, whether or not you celebrate or cheer the death of someone, there are different opinions on that, even within the United States. But it's very difficult to say that this was celebrated in any way across the world. Certainly not in Afghanistan, and the most recent, obviously, evidence of Afghan, at least the Taliban's in Afghanistan, the killing that I believe 80 people were killed by suicide bombers, and many, many injured, just as a first kind of a protest against the killing of Osama bin Laden. In Muslim countries generally, there has been obviously no so-called celebration. Even in the most conservative country, in Saudi Arabia, there has been obviously no kind of a celebration of Osama's death. But it might have some importance in terms of the question of whether or not the leadership of Al-Qaeda, the terrorist organization network, whether that would be in demise because of the death of their leader, kind of a martyrdom, as they call it, martyrdom of Osama bin Laden. It is taken in a sense very differently in terms of the reaction to the some call it assassination, some call it murder, some call it Osama bin Laden was really killed as a what Mr. Bush used to call enemy combatant, that he had declared war on America and probably planning more explosions, sabotaging railway system or other ways of killing and aiming and maiming American innocent people, regardless. It wasn't just the question of American military, but the Americans in general could be, in his perspective, which was a perversion of Islam, really. It's a fringe extremist group in the Muslim world, by no means representative of the Muslim world. So it may have some significance. We already are on very high alert in this country, understandably, because there are a lot of people who wanted to have some kind of a revenge. They think this was not the just way. This reminds me of, I wrote an article about this at the time of the killing of Saddam Hussein, a dictator, and the person, of course, we overthrew. And Saddam Hussein, among other things, had wished that when the time came to kill him, that they would shoot him rather than hang him. And it was not done that way. It was he was hanged and so forth.
What's the difference?
Well, that was his wish. It was less indignified if he had been shot like a soldier, but not hanged like a criminal, so to speak. But there is a connection, Rick, here in terms of what is called Arab Spring or Arab uprisings all the way from Libya, North Africa, to the Persian Gulf in Bahrain. And that is, I want to give a little context so people would understand whether or not the killing of bin Laden has had any or could have any broader implications, which affect our foreign policy as well. To go back, in the Arab world, there were eras that the main model or paradigm was nationalism, and that was because of the era of colonialism and imperialism and the Arab struggle for independence from foreign control. And that was the dominant concern of the Arabs in the Middle East and North Africa and so on. And then nationalism achieved in the sense of independence achieved by many of these countries, then the question was how to rule. And the ruling became, in terms of what was then known in the 50s and early 60s into 70s, as Arab socialism. That was the model. Gamal Abdel Nasser in Egypt, which had the revolution in 1952, and Syria and other places in the Arab world, thought that's the way to go. And in the Cold War days, that was being close to the Soviet Union. So that was the era of Arab socialism. And that formula didn't work. Nationalist formula didn't work. And there comes on the horizon the Islamic extremism.
Let me interrupt for just a second.
Sure.
You talk about socialism.
Yeah.
My understanding, and again, hardly your knowledge on the topic,
sure,
was that back in the 60s,
yes,
that the United States had a choice between Pakistan and India,
yes,
about who to support. And they chose Pakistan because India had shown a greater interest in sort of leaning towards the Soviets.
Correct.
At the time.
Correct.
And so Pakistan was the country of the two that received all the United States assistance, wherever it came from, whether it came from people, money, etc. But we look at them now,
yes,
and it's not the country that received the United States assistance, it's the one that did not,
yeah,
that shows a greater... Although I guess that it couldn't necessarily claim that India is a socialist country.
No, but, you know, the term, of course, used loosely in terms of what it means, and mainly in many of these countries was the issue of nationalization of resources, especially, let's say, oil resources to be nationalized in Iran first and then Iraq and so forth. But to finish my context question, then there comes on the horizon that in Arabic they say Islam huwal hal, which means Islam is the solution. So it wasn't nationalism, it wasn't socialism, no, it was Islam, that if you have Islam as Islamic law to govern the country, then you have a solution to your economic problem, political problem, educational, etc. Now, now we have had, since the Tunisian uprising in December last year, we have had Arab awakening and Arab spring from North Africa to the Persian Gulf, as I mentioned. And this has completely overshadowed the notion of Islam is the solution. The slogans, the placards, all the street demonstrations went with the slogan of we want freedom and we want democracy. Not Islam, not socialism, not nationalism. And that is very important because Al-Qaeda terrorism is really overshadowed. Nobody is thinking, again, there are always fringe extremists, but nobody is really thinking that Osama bin Laden had or his followers have solution for the problems of the of North Africa or Middle East or anywhere. And therefore, this uprisings that we see nowadays is a great rejection of the notion that Islamic extremism is the solution.
And why would that be? Has it been decades of, I don't know, poverty,
yes,
problems in other manners where, as in any country,
yeah,
where if there's not success for whatever topic or effort is being put forth, that you say, no more of that, let's sure try this.
Sure, correct. That is an excellent point, Rick. It's an experiment. Now, for example, you take Egypt. They got the downfall of Mubarak, the dictator. But the big question is, even for the Egyptians who have said so, when the dictator is gone, but is dictatorship is gone. Is this military that controls the situation in Egypt is going to really have a transition to democracy as the people in the street, the Liberation Square, shouted months of demonstrations? Or is it going to go back to the same authoritarian control that Egypt had under Mubarak? Now they want to try Mubarak and try his sons, put them on trial, and so forth. But therefore there is this question. This is an experiment. How is it going to... What would be the outcome? Nobody really can predict, you know. But the phenomenon is there, that there is no one can really doubt that this is a call for freedom. And I wonder what Mr. Jefferson, who always wanted to see what they called the ball of liberty, would roll around the world, you know, what he would think when he would look at the Third World, especially the Middle East, North Africa, that there are all these demands for freedom, you know. And it would probably please Jefferson enormously to see that his aspiration is actually coming into some kind of a practice.
You were listening to WNRN's Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call. Our guest today, Professor Ruhi Ramazani, is a professor of government and foreign affairs from the University of Virginia. We're talking about Osama bin Laden and Middle Eastern relationships. Well, Professor, we talked about sort of a little background on all these countries, but where does that put us today and tomorrow in terms of the United States entering Pakistan without proprietary permission beforehand and then killing Osama bin Laden?
The Pakistanis in public, obviously, have expressed in the parliament by the prime minister, and the Pakistani public is expressing outrage that the sovereignty of Pakistan was violated by...
We didn't ask for permission before we went
correct,
and did it.
Correct. That we did with the helicopters, or stealth helicopters, and killed, Osama bin Laden, and injured the wife, one of the wives, and so forth. But the whole operation was without, obviously, Pakistan, we call an ally, without any permission of Pakistan. That's one question. In that sense, the Pakistanis in public are really outraged. In private, I am wondering whether they realize that ultimately this is also to their benefit, because Al-Qaeda was not just a problem, or bin Laden just a problem for the United States. Obviously, we suffered enormously during 9/11, but also for Pakistan and Pakistani society and politics. So in private, they might have a better understanding of why we had to do this in the interests of both countries, ultimately. In regard to the rest of the Middle East, I think it depends. There are countries that are quite happy, without even mentioning it, that the leader of Al-Qaeda network, so to speak, is gone. But again, there are extremist groups in these countries that are not very happy about what was done to him. And there are some people even in our own country, here in the United States, who raise the question as to why we didn't capture the guy, because he was unarmed. And we could have captured him and put him on trial, either ourselves or to the International Criminal Court, you know. That kind of a discussion was also present during the Iraqi question on what to do with Saddam Hussein. And finally it was decided that Iraqis would give the trial to Saddam Hussein rather than an international court, you know. But that question is raised and discussed and debated whether or not it was an illegal thing that we did, apart from the sovereignty of Pakistan, but whether or not we had the option of simply capturing the unarmed man instead of killing him on sight. Some say perhaps that was the instruction. And the reason for the instruction to kill him on the side was that if we had captured Osama bin Laden and brought him to the United States, Guantanamo, and so forth, it would have been a tremendous propaganda for his cause and for his groups, you know. And perhaps that was the kind of a thinking. If it is true that the instruction was for the Navy SEALs commanders to just kill the guy.
You know? And for many people, the question is he a martyr either way?
Yes.
I guess the definition of martyr,
yes.
Meaning that we kill him and do that, but certainly a flagship if he's kept alive until the trial. Please call us up with your question or comment if you have thoughts about today's topic, Osama bin Laden, and the effect on Middle Eastern relationships. Our guest today, Professor R.K. Ramazani, the new title of Spiritual Father of the International Center for Jefferson Studies at Monticello, which will be having an event on June 13th. Google Monticello and you can sign up for free, but you do need to actually sign up. It is 11:21 on the Wake Up Call. Markets of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley, mostly cloudy with showers and thunderstorms today, highs in the low 70s. A little warmer in Richmond, mostly cloudy with showers tonight, lows 55 to 60. Mostly cloudy with showers and thunderstorms tomorrow, highs 65 to 70, warmer in the Richmond area. Right now, clouds out there, but nice and sunny here in Charlottesville, 67 in the Valley, 69 in Lynchburg, 70 in Richmond, 71 in Charlottesville.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And let's thank Blue Ridge Mountain Sports for their support. Blue Ridge Mountain Sports, where you are encouraged to be kind, have fun, and to do the right thing. Blue Ridge Mountain Sports is at Barracks Road in Charlottesville and three locations in Richmond. For more information online, it's brms.com. We also want to thank L. Oppelman's. They are the Central Virginia's complete music headquarters, continuously operated since 1890. They're located at 909 Main Street in downtown Lynchburg. L. Oppelman's music department is now featuring acoustic guitars, banjos, mandolins, and violins, as well as electric guitar packages from Fender. Also available, complete drum sets. L. Oppelman, 909 Main Street, Lynchburg, and online it's loppelman.com. All right, back with our guest today, Professor R.K. Ramazani. Dial up 979-0919, 1-877 WNRN rocks. Professor, we were talking about the killing versus the capturing and trial justice. How do the other countries, what do they say about this? Well, a few, tell us a little bit about the Middle Eastern countries, but then some of our closer allies, Britain, France, etc.
Yeah, that is, again, a debate that is going on. But my own sense is that those who are talking about perhaps it would have been a better option to have captured and try and put him on trial, that this debate is going to fade and is not going to be really continuing. The issue of, for example, having some photos or pictures of Osama bin Laden after he was killed, and of course I think wisely the White House decided against that for really good reasons. It would not have helped anything much, and that debate is already gone. There was also a discussion as to whether or not, according to the Muslim tradition, the man was handled, his corpse was handled after his death.
Right, burial at sea.
A burial at sea kind of a notion. Well, the preferable way in the Muslim tradition is you wash the body, you have it in a white cloth, so to speak, and bury it in the ground, you know. Unless, let's say, somebody is dead, died in a ship on the seas, on the high seas, because you have to do the burial in 24 hours, you know, that cannot be done, then therefore burial at sea would be the option to have. But again, we decided to do it not only in terms of the Muslim tradition to have a quick burial, you know, despite washing and so on, but also that burying Osama bin Laden somewhere would have created a shrine for the extremists, you know, a symbol, and would be a kind of a nuisance, really, in terms of our policies. And it would have been a symbolic importance to the people who follow bin Laden, whether he is dead or alive. You know. So that was probably a right decision.
What do are the Muslim purists okay with this? I mean, it's one thing for you talk about a shrine, the more extreme Muslims. But Muslim purists?
Muslim purists wouldn't like it. No question about it. Yeah.
And are they, is there anger shown towards the United States?
Not really. Interestingly enough, not on that issue. Not on that issue. The issue that is raised again is whether or not there was the option of capturing him instead of killing him, particularly because the man, from all we know, was unarmed.
Call up with your question or comment, 979-0919, Professor R.K. Ramazani, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS, if you need to use the toll-free line. Again, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS, as we talk about the, I don't even know which word to use, which is more accurate, the death or the killing of Osama bin Laden?
Well, you could use killing, murder, assassination and death. I think it was killing, really, but obviously then it was a matter of being dead after he was killed.
Let's talk about Pakistan.
Pakistan is furious at the moment again. Certainly in public, and this is making the tension between Islamabad, the capital of Pakistan, and Washington really very tense relationship. And yet, the fact of the matter is that we just have got to work with Pakistan, the government of Pakistan. We have always suspected the inter-service, the kind of a ISI, of Pakistani equivalent of, let's say, CIA. We have always suspected that there might be people kind of favoring or inclined to favor Al-Qaeda and Taliban and so forth. And that suspicion is there, mainly in terms of the military and the intelligence service of Pakistan, rather than the civil government, which really is considered not to have too much influence in the policy making of Pakistan. And of course, when we talked about the Pakistanis either being incompetent, you know, in doing this. There was another expression used that they certainly did not like, that it was accusative and difficult for the proud Pakistanis to swallow, that their space was invaded and there was no permission and so on. And yet the suspicion lingers on how on earth there could have been such a fortress so close to the capital. I have been through that area long ago, and it's a beautiful area. I mean, no question about it. Mountain and so forth, streams and so on. It's a kind of a suburban type of an area. But on the other hand, if it wasn't really so unusual to have such a high walls and barbed wires, because there is so much fear, insecurity in Pakistan, that people who can afford it do have high walls and do have wires and so forth. So if you put it in that context, one could say, well, it is possible that Pakistanis didn't know anything about this and until it happened, you know, until the killing of bin Laden.
Let me thank Blue Ridge Community College for their support today. They are featuring Growing Green in the Valley. That's May 19th from 8:15 in the morning until 3 p.m. That's a one-day symposium featuring agritourism and sustainability experts educating the community about environmentally friendly practices such as small-scale solar, wind power, and green building, with exhibits from local businesses. For more information, it's brcc.edu. All right, back with our guest today, Professor R.K. Ramazani, speaking about the death of Osama bin Laden and how that affects United States relationships with Middle Eastern countries. Professor, so Osama bin Laden is dead. What does the United States do next in terms of carrying on the search for those who are trying to hurt us?
Yes. Well, you know, first of all, there is some kind of a probably debate going on within the Al-Qaeda network as to who would be really the successor to bin Laden. Zawahiri, this is an Egyptian by origin, a medical man by origin, by education. Some talk about him, but apparently he's not a charismatic leader, and it wouldn't necessarily follow that he would be leading the Al-Qaeda network. There is another one, an American-born, actually, a cleric, extremist in Yemen. He has been very successful in recruiting extremists, and we have already had people, you know, if you remember in the Times Square, it was prevented kind of a thing, but it was from Yemen, and it was certainly with the influence of this cleric. So there may well be a discussion as to who would really lead the Al-Qaeda network. But regardless of who would do so, our focus now is on Taliban in Afghanistan. And we are fighting that, them, and they are the ones who just again, in revenging, so to speak, avenging bin Laden, committed this suicides, you know, bombing and killing of innocent people, who was actually being trained to be policemen and so on for the state of Afghanistan. But the problem of terrorism is there, regardless of the death of bin Laden. And we are on high alert, and we are trying to be very vigilant in this country, because we certainly have been threatened that there will be more acts of revenge. And the war in Afghanistan is going on, but there are now, since the death of bin Laden, people who say now is the time to pull out, not to wait until 2014 to leave Afghanistan, you know. We are supposedly trying to start withdrawing from that country now, by the end of this year, but whether or not that kind of a notion will prevail, I really doubt it, because there are a lot of people, including some Afghans, who believe that precipitous withdrawal of American forces will be very dangerous for Afghanistan to really become a stable country. And then again, it might become a haven for Al-Qaeda terrorists, you know. That's a kind of a problem that we are facing right now. But, again, the sentiments seem to be more in terms of the withdrawal of our forces and NATO, of course, from Afghanistan. And, of course, there is an agreement that we would actually withdraw even our 47,000 soldiers that we still have in Iraq, that we are in agreement with the Iraqi government to withdraw our forces, you know. So, again, at the same time, we have become partially involved in Libya. And there is all kinds of questions about that, you know.
Before we jump into that, here's a question that's out there. 979-0919, by the way. 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS, toll free. You can also send me one through the internet at WNRN Studio, is the AOL instant message address. What role will the bin Laden killing play in the 2012 presidential race?
Well, it's a long time before then, and at the moment, certainly this has benefited the president in terms of public opinion, and the polls show that. But how long this will continue is, to me, a big question, and frankly, because the main concern of the public is the economy and unemployment. And those are the salient issues that are going to dominate the scene. So I tend to think that the popularity of the president in with respect to this particular decision, which was a courageous and very highly risky decision that was made, I think the effect of this will not be great on the election of Obama, re-election of Obama. He will still have to deal with these questions of economy, unemployment in the first place, and the health question certainly is going to dominate the debate and discussion. And of course, the obvious question of deficit and how to reduce it, and the divide, obviously, in terms of the Republicans and the Democrats on the issues of of how to actually reduce our deficit. I think these will be still the dominant question before the election, the next election.
So it's just a nice bump in the polls for something that many, if not most, people would say, thank you for taking care of that, but it will be gone. In 18 months.
Yes, that is my opinion. Again, we have far more pressing problems, really, and whether Democrats or Republicans are going to have to address those fundamental questions of the economy.
11:39 on the wake-up call. Our guest today, Professor R.K. Ramazania, University of Virginia, Professor of Government and Foreign Affairs.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markins of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
And this week, Paul Revere may be better known for his heroic horse ride, but Jack Jewett's 40 miles to save Virginia's legislatures was actually a grander feat. This week's cover story tells the full story. University of Virginia overhauls its sexual assault policy, and a UVA law student lies about racial profiling incident. Why did he lie, and will it cost him his degree? The Hook, a new design freshly installed every Thursday on Newsstands Now. And let me take a moment and thank Dixon Disposal for helping us be on air today. Dixon reminds you that you can reduce household garbage by purchasing products with reuse and recycling in mind. Small changes in your lifestyle can keep our planet green for years to come. When Dixon's picks up your trash, they sort and separate it for recycling. You can help the planet stay green with curbside service from Dixon Disposal at your home or business. 978-2111 or DixonDisposal.com. Back with our guest today, Ruhi Ramazani, also known as the spiritual father of International Center of Jefferson Studies at Monticello. And go online, Google Monticello. There's should be a place to sign up for an upcoming event there on June 13th, where Professor Ramazani will be giving the keynote address. Discussion overall will be about diplomacy and education, discovering and teaching reality. And Professor Ramazani will be there as well as several ambassadors, local professor James Sofka, who's been on here. We've been on this program before with all sorts of, and it is free, with all sorts of topics ongoing. Professor, we've been talking about Osama bin Laden and its effect on Middle Eastern relationships. Al-Qaeda, and again, my minimal studies through the New Yorker and other places, will Al-Qaeda continue in any sort of grand scheme? Because their leader is gone, and all they've been about is terrorism. But we talk about other sort of strong and extreme groups, Hamas, Hezbollah, which have been noted for getting their own state in terms of land and structure, providing social services to those who believe and fight for them. And Al-Qaeda has done neither. Will they sort of fall down while these others grow?
Well, and you know, it is perhaps less known because we talk about Al-Qaeda so much in terms of terrorism and their threat to us. And obviously they have had bombings in Madrid and London. And it's not just the United States, but the West in general. But Al-Qaeda does have a kind of ideology which claims territory, but not like Hamas, you know, in terms of the occupation of Palestine, in terms of Israel, or for that matter Hezbollah, because Hezbollah's main mission is to make sure that there is no control, no threat of Israel in the Lebanese territory. But Al-Qaeda, in terms of the ideology, does have a very expansive, imperial, in a sense, notion of what should be done. According to their ideology, there should be a creation of the caliphate, which means a global Islamic state. So it is a huge kind of a aspiration and ambition, and it obviously extreme, that they want the establishment of Islamic law throughout the world, you know, whether it's America or England or the West or Europe as a whole or the rest of the world. So it is a global kind of ideology, and that is certainly not with a limited territory in mind, like like Hezbollah or Hamas, you know.
But because you can't put a fence around it,
yes,
and keep your believers together so that they can continue to talk
correct.
To one another,
correct.
Does that mean that Al-Qaeda has a greater possibility of dispersing?
Sure. And again, as you well know, for example, Afghanistan, really we are told that there are not more than a couple of hundred Al-Qaeda people there. Of course, Taliban is a different matter. But they are in Yemen, you know, and some suspect that maybe there are some even in these rebels against Gaddafi government in Libya and so on. So they are affiliates, so to speak, of Al-Qaeda, and they are global in scope in the sense that they are in different places, like various pockets, enclaves, and so forth. But if they were able to realize their dream, the dream in terms of territorial control would be Afghanistan, as it was where they had the haven, and it would be Saudi Arabia. Bin Laden, after all, was a Saudi citizen. But again, the ideology is so global and expansive that at the moment there is not simply a territorial dimension to it, but simply a terrorist dimension. And that involves, you know, any Americans certainly at the top of the list in terms of targets to be terrorized. In my own view, the factors that underpin terrorist acts are very complicated, partly it is a matter of poverty, partly it's a matter of, frankly, lack of modern, what we call, education. These are essentially people who want to go back to medieval times, a way of life, you know, yet there are grievances that are economic, political. There are many who invoke the plight of the Palestinians as one of the reasons that you have extremist Muslims, not just Al-Qaeda, you know, Hamas, you know, and so forth. They are not Al-Qaeda related, but their main grievance is against Israel, and they certainly do not want to recognize Israel as a state. And this new chapter of Palestinian Authority in the West Bank and Hamas in Gaza Strip, the two sides for the first time in a long time are trying to get together and form a united government to the great distaste of Israel, because Hamas doesn't recognize the existence of Israel, you know. There is this issue, Palestinian issue, and the lack of any significant progress on peace process. As you know, Mitchell was the envoy to bring about some kind of a solution. You know, he had distinguished himself in terms of the Irish question, Irish nationalism, but he just, in a sense, has thrown up his arms and says there is really no American policy toward the issue of peace between the Palestinians and Israelis. Maybe the administration has given up, you know, on this question. So the Palestinian issue is indeed used also by Muslim extremists, whether they are Hezbollah or Hamas or Al-Qaeda. It makes no difference.
It's a sort of a silly comparison, but when a sports team loses the championship or loses their star player, many people who just follow along move on. They stop following. they find another team whose star player is in the media all the time. Do you expect something similar to happen with Al-Qaeda now that the second in command or whomever moves up may not be as popular, may not feel as threatening to others?
Correct.
So we talked a little bit about whether or not they would disperse, but whether or not they have as many followers, the United States always has to have someone as the most dangerous.
Yes.
Because it works the other way as well.
Yes.
They may not, the people who follow Al-Qaeda may not, some of them may leave, and so now there's not as many following. But on the other side of the seesaw, someone has to be the most dangerous for the United States. Who is that going to be?
Well, to be honest, we have made Iran, in fact, we have put it in words, that's the greatest threat to international peace and security. In some ways, you wonder whether Iran has not replaced the Soviet Union as the threat to America. The way it is depicted, definitely, it's not just a threat to Israel, but just threats to the United States and the world at large, you know. Yes, it is next to impossible to think that somebody would not emerge to carry the flag, the Al-Qaeda banner, sooner or later. It might not be a bin Laden. Look at Iran, you know. When Khomeini was alive, nobody believed that anybody can replace him or continue his tradition and ideology. Well, Khomeini is long dead, and the system is there. The Islamic Republic is there. The guy happens to be called Khamenei instead of Khomeini, you know. So, but it is there, and it is next to impossible to think that there won't be someone emerging to fill the, if not completely, the role of bin Laden. Would be able to have some kind of a leadership. My own take is that the people in the streets, they are getting killed, not for Islam, not for Al-Qaeda. They're getting killed because they want freedom of expression, freedom of assembly, all the things that we associate. Freedom of religion, frankly, in Egypt, that's a big question. About the Coptic people, there was burning of their church recently and so on. It's a big issue. And so the issues have become so different, really, that throughout the Muslim world, the quest, again, is for freedom. And obviously, different people think differently about what it means, but it's obvious what they mean. From all the things we know, they are asking for freedom speech. They want the newspapers to be free. They want to make sure that the government doesn't control all media and so on. These are the things that would appear to us to be closer to the it's not Jeffersonian democracy, but certainly it's kind of a quest for freedom and democracy, rather than, you know, again, depiction of Islam as the solution to the problems of the Muslim world.
11:53 on the Wake Up Call. Our guest today, Professor R.K. Ramazani from University of Virginia and the Department of Government and Foreign Affairs. Let me thank Blue Ridge Graphics for allowing us to be on air today. Blue Ridge Graphics can be found at Meade Avenue and East High Street in Charlottesville. They provide custom t-shirts and sportswear, plus promotional items for schools, organizations, and businesses. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746, and online, brgtshirts.com. And again, just a few minutes left in our program today, and then Drew Thompson will be here for Les Temps Perdue, best of 80s and 90s alternative music. They are brought to you in part by Plan 9 Music and Basil. Requests are always welcome on Les Temps Purdue. Professor, we talk about who the, I guess, the number one enemy may be. It's sort of like the FBI top 10. You capture one, someone has to move up. Do you believe that the current state is due to religion? Because it seems that before these countries or organizations, we had the Soviet Union. And that was more about democracy versus others. But even now, we have a few countries that may be democratic, but we still battle with them in other ways that seem to me the only thing left is religion.
Well,
let's save that one, because you know what? Tom has called in.
All right.
And we'll get you back on later, another day.
Sure.
For mine, and we'll take Tom. Hey, Tom.
Oh, good morning.
Good morning. Question? Comment?
Yes, I do have a question for Professor Ramazani. I was wondering, Professor, if you could contrast the opinion of the West and the United States in particular among members of the Arab world. It seems to have deteriorated so much in the advent of Islamic radicalism. Could you describe what you think caused that?
You mean the decline of Islamic radicalism?
Well, essentially just the deterioration of the opinion of the West in the eyes of the Arab world.
I want to respond, before I... is the decline of... could you...
Sure. Tom, do me a favor.
Let me try to rephrase that.
Okay.
It seems to me that there's so much hostility, at least among a small minority in the Arab world, directed toward the West and toward the United States.
Correct.
And I was wondering what the cause of that is. I, thinking that post World War II, the West was viewed favorably by much of the Arab world.
Sure. No, that's a great question, and I have no reason to believe that I can really answer it, because it has so many tributaries, this anti-Americanism, anti-Westernism, in a sense. You know, that's a profound question. Now, what is the cause is impossible. It's multi-causal, multifactorial. First of all, there is the... in the eyes of many people in the Muslim world, that United States has really, in a sense, become a British legatee, imperial legatee, that colonialism and imperialism that the Muslim world had, whether it was in the form of the French or the British or the Portuguese, or the Dutch, whatever, that it was Western. And that is still there. But I cannot say today that is a major factor. After World War II, it was. It was anti-colonial, and the whole process of decolonization was there, and there was a height of Arab nationalism, in fact, Muslim nationalism, everywhere. But that is not the primary mover of things now, a mover of anti-Americanism. A lot of it is using the Palestinian issue as the rallying point, that here is injustice, that from the perspective of many, that Israel was a plant of the West, at the expense of the Arabs, who had nothing to do with Holocaust and so forth and so on. You see, that is one definite reason for many in terms of anti-American, that it's American foreign policy. And Right.
And unfortunately, we're going to have Tom send me an email or post it on the website for more follow-up because it's 11:59.
Sure.
Have to finish up. Tom, next time, tune in earlier when you're going to ask such demandingly deep questions with all sorts of
great question.
Backup. Yeah. And you can listen to the podcast, cvillepodcast.com. There are ways to post your questions and comments. I'll make sure that Professor Ramazani is aware of them for anybody who has further information. Professor, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Once again, there's lots more information to go through than in just 60 minutes. I'll have you back on a little later. Don't forget that June 13th, you can hear the keynote address from the professor or other speakers at Monticello, Google Monticello. Sign up for the free event on June 13th. All right. Adios.
Thanks.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. And by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon gasoline, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@AOL.com or at wakeupcall@WNRN.org. The wake-up call is produced by Sean McCord. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for the Wake Up Call, only on WNRN.